This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. According to the National Institute of Mental Health, nearly 21 million American adults, nearly 10% of us, suffer from some form of depression. Depression is the major cause of disability for adults in this country. And each year, Americans spend billions of dollars on antidepressant medications like Prozac and Paxil. And psychiatrists, say critics, no longer spend much time in talk therapy with their patients. They've become drug dispensers. You want to talk to somebody? Here's the name of a psychologist. I've only got 15 minutes on your health care plan. So what's the best way to treat depression? One of my guests this hour says don't treat it as a disease with drugs because it is not a disease. Dr. James Gordon is the founder and director of the Center for Mind-Body Medicine. He is a clinical professor in psychiatry and family medicine at Georgetown University School of Medicine in Washington. His new book is called Unstuck, Your Guide to the Seven-Stage Journey of Depression, and he joins us from WWNO in New Orleans. And that should be out of depression, I should say. Welcome back to Science Friday, Dr. Gordon.
Hey, it's nice to be here again, Ira.
Thank you. Also with us is Dr. Peter Kramer. He's a clinical professor of psychiatry at Brown University and the author of several books, including Listening to Prozac and Against Depression. And he joins us from Providence. Welcome back to Science Friday, Dr. Kramer.
Hi, thank you.
Our number 1-800-989-8255. I invite you to give us a call. But remember, as always, when we talk about medical or any kinds of issues that affect your body, we cannot talk about your condition specifically. So don't ask us, please, or don't ask our guests to diagnose or treat you over the phone. It's not ethical for us or for them to do that. And if you have questions about your own medical condition, we tell you to talk to your own doctor. And, of course, if you want more information, you can surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com and talk to other folks in Second Life and Science Friday Island. James Gordon, and the first line in the preface of your book is, and you repeat it over and over again in many places, is depression is not a disease. It's not? What is it?
Well, depression is first and foremost a human experience, and it's a question of how we're going to look at that human experience. There's certainly some evidence that it's a disease, but it doesn't seem to me that we've gotten to the point where we've established it's a disease in the way that, for example, insulin-dependent diabetes is. Mm-hmm. I see depression, the signs and symptoms of depression, as signs and symptoms that our life is out of balance, the change is necessary. It's not the end stage of a disease process, but a wake-up call. It's the beginning of a process of potentially great and transformative change.
Would you say then that we're living our lives incorrectly if we're suffering from depression?
Well, when you start using words like incorrectly, there's a kind of judgmental mm-hmm. quality to it. But in a sense, you're right. We're living our lives in a way that's not suiting us for the most part. Or we've simply suffered a tremendous loss and we need to recover and rebalance. So either something has happened to us that we have to deal with that's overwhelming to us, or in many cases, we've gotten ourselves into a place where we feel we can't move ahead in the way that we've been accustomed to. We feel stuck, hence the title of the book, mm-hmm. Unstuck. So depression comes for many reasons. I work in war zones and post-war and post-disaster situations like New Orleans, and there are lots of people who are clinically depressed after Hurricane Katrina. So the question really is, given the fact that you are depressed as an individual or as a whole population or a significant percentage of a whole population, what do you do now? Mm-hmm. And that's really what I feel is most important.
Peter Kramer, your take on depression as a disease?
I think depression clearly is a disease. There's a question about how societies define diseases, and there are a few conditions that are not diseases in some societies and are in others, and we could talk about those. But generally, if something causes a great deal of pain and suffering, if it's syndromal, that is, has a form involving a cluster of symptoms, and it has some of these other sort of cloud of conditions that define diseases, it runs in families, it's partly heritable, it correlates with other diseases, then it's a disease. And I think one area Dr. Gordon and I might disagree about is I think also in the past 10 or 15 years, there's this one other criterion that we think about, which is there a bodily location of disease? Is there something that's gone wrong that causes the disease or something the disease causes that goes wrong in the body? And I think there just has been so much brain science pointing to disruptions that either cause or are caused by depression, that it's met sort of that last criterion, and it really is a disease. And, of course, there's one other criterion, which is that it has a history of being thought of at least some of the time as a disease in this culture, and depression meets that standard as well.
Are you both, I'll let you respond in a second, James. Are you both talking about the same thing when you're talking about depression?
Well, I think with diseases, we start with the severe. Like, why is acne a disease? Well, there are terrible forms of acne or psoriasis. If you saw only mild psoriasis, you'd say, well, that's not a disease. But people die of psoriasis. So I think when we think about whether something is a disease, in the case of depression, we think about people who, say, have a family, strong family history of depression. They become very depressed, very stuck, frankly, at a very young age. They can't get out of it. Ordinary psychological means, the fact that their circumstances are good, don't solve it. And then there are all these other correlations, which is they die younger at every stage of life. They have more heart disease, more stroke. They, of course, die more often of suicide. And I think we start with that core. And I think most people in this culture right now, by the way, say that would be a disease. Now, I would say some other things where there's a more obvious cause, but you respond in this extreme stuck way and others wouldn't. And then also the depression becomes recurrent and worse with future episodes and so on. I would say those are part of the disease as well.
Dr. Gordon?
You know, I certainly agree, and I think Dr. Kramer's actually done a wonderful job of summarizing some of the recent brain science in his book Against Depression, which I cite in my book. But the issue that I see as most important is if indeed there are changes in the brain of some people. First of all, I want to make that point very clearly. It's not 100% or anywhere near 100% consistent. There are changes in the brains of people who are depressed. There are changes in cortical function, changes in the hippocampus of the brain. And those changes, as I think both Dr. Kramer and I would agree, are generally the product of significant stress. The issue for me really is that if you can reverse those changes by simple non-pharmacological methods, relaxation, meditation, physical exercise, learning to see and understand the world differently in a less pessimistic, less self-defeating way, why is it so important to focus on depression as a disease? Why not take the opportunity to focus instead on it as a human experience and then to give human beings the tools they need to reverse those biological changes, where everything that happens to us is biological? There's a recent study published in one of the neuroscience journals showing brain changes in mothers who are smiling at their babies. So, you know, it's not that I'm disputing the biology.
That's where my question about, are we talking about the same range of depression? I mean, if people who are truly depressed, who don't smile, can't get out of bed, can't function, are they able to go through your 7-stage journey? Is some people who really are clinically depressed?
Yes. Many of them are. Many of the people whom I've seen, many of the people I describe in the book have been diagnosed not by me but initially by other psychiatrists, including those at the National Institute of Mental Health and the major medical centers, as clinically depressed. I would agree there is a range, and those people whom I certainly remember seeing and I don't see as often now, it's not that they don't exist, of course they do, who literally can't get out of bed, who can't eat anything. Mm-hmm. That's at one end of the continuum. That's not a very large number of the people. That you quoted a figure of 21 million people. I would say that's a small percentage of those 21 million people. The people whom I see do indeed have the signs and symptoms of depression. 2 weeks of lack of pleasure in their life, of not being able, feeling like they can't move, of agitation, difficulty sleeping, difficulty eating, sometimes suicidal thoughts and feelings. That's clinical depression. Everybody I see has clinical, whom I write about in the book, has clinical depression.
Peter Kramer, would you agree? I mean, a lot of times we hear people say, oh, I'm blue, I'm feeling depressed, I didn't get my paycheck this week, you know, my vacation's canceled. And then they go to their doctors, and they, because their commercials on TV say, hey, you know, ask your doctor if you're feeling like this. And then the doctor gives them something.
You know, I have more respect for internists than family doctors, probably, than the people who put up, you know, that sort of straw man. I think that They're part of the diagnosis of depression is that it really has to interfere with your functioning. And I think when it gets to that point, it really is different. And a number of the objections to depression to depression being a disease don't take into account the level of severity that really is required. I think the disease label is very important because depression is dangerous. I agree that often depression responds to psychotherapy and it responds to other things that resemble psychotherapy and things like bright lights in winter and exercise and probably dietary changes and so on. But for me, the real measure of success of a treatment is that it succeeds. And I think if you have tried the things that you find more appealing as first steps, and if they haven't worked, you are at risk for all the things that go with depression, like the strokes and heart attacks and recurrences and problems with career and relationship and so on. And I think in that case, it makes sense to think about some of the better studied interventions, which, as I say, are psychotherapy and, yes, medication. And I think the medications, you know, to put on the table really what I think a lot of the discussion is about is should we run the medications. The medications are reasonably effective relative to these other changes that people talk about. And the big difference, you know, in the percentage of people who are said to get better in studies of medication and studies of things like yoga and so on, is that the standards of study for medication have gotten very high, appropriately so. But they include looking at all the people who enter the study, looking mostly at the people who get fully better, looking at large populations, looking at giving medication who don't have an interest in the medication and don't have a stake in the outcome. And I think those sorts of tests largely haven't been done for things like meditation and so on.
Absolutely. We're going to get back, Dr. Gordon, give you a chance to reply. Talking with James Gordon, author of Unstuck, Your Guide to the Seven-Stage Journey Out of Depression. Also talking with Dr. Peter Kramer, author of Listening to Prozac and Against Depression. Our number, 1-800-989-8255. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking this hour about depression with my guest, Dr. Peter Kramer, author of Listening to Prozac and Against Depression. Also talking with Dr. James Gordon. He's founder and director of the Center for Mind-Body Medicine and author of the new book, Unstuck, Your Guide to the Seven-Stage Journey of Depression. Our number, 1-800-989-8255. Dr. Gordon, a good point raised by Dr. Kramer. How well have these holistic medicines been studied? Yoga, meditation, even I put acupuncture in there.
Let me address a couple points here, if I could.
Sure.
I would first of all disagree somewhat with Dr. Kramer about the effectiveness of the antidepressant drugs, and I know that I don't want to get into a long debate about it, but there have been some looks again at whether or not the drugs are as effective as the published studies show. And when it turns out in a couple of studies that have been presented, looking at all the unpublished as well as the published studies, that the antidepressants aren't nearly as effective, would appear not to be nearly as effective as they have looked in recent years. Secondly, antidepressant drugs have in large numbers of people significant side effects. So what I would say is that an approach which has virtually only positive side benefits, an approach which doesn't use one particular intervention, say yoga or meditation or exercise or group support or psychotherapy, but combines all of those, each of which has been shown to be better than placebo in treating depression, is the approach with which I would begin, together with often enough group support. If that approach doesn't work, and incidentally, we have been doing both open trials of hundreds of people and now randomized controlled trials of a method that puts together these techniques and these approaches. But if that approach doesn't work, that seems to me to be the appropriate time for medication, which is potentially useful, but also brings with it certain hazards. And I would agree with Dr. Kramer that it is important to treat depression right away. But if you can improve, as both the people whom I describe in Unstuck have, using these other methods, as a number of studies have begun to show, there are not as many studies on these methods as on antidepressant drugs. They need to be studied more thoroughly. One of the reasons, incidentally, that they're not studied as thoroughly is because there's no massive profit. You can't patent yoga. You can't patent meditation. You can't patent group support, whereas you can patent and profit from drugs. So a lot more money goes into the studies. So what I'm saying is we need to look at this approach. And I would say very strongly that we should use this approach preferentially, this approach that mobilizes people to help themselves rather than an approach that relies primarily on drugs. And if that approach doesn't work, then it's time to look at the drugs.
What's wrong with that logic, Dr. Kramer? Sounds like it should work.
I don't myself advocate an approach that mostly relies on drugs. I like to see my depressed patients exercise, use bright lights up here in New England in the winter. I like to see them improve their social relationships, their thoughts about social relationships. And I always have them in psychotherapy. So I think it's true. We want, you know, I think that goes with my thought about this as a dangerous, risky condition, is that I want to throw as much at it that's ever been shown to work as I can. And I think most of those things are useful in people's lives as well. I just want to say that I wouldn't leave medication out of the mix. You know, fairly soon I would think about it if other things aren't making the condition budge. And, of course, we do have some notion of how bad things are. I think some people, you know, are doing pretty well despite not sleeping and eating and brooding and so on. And we can go for a while with them. Other people, I think we worry. It's been a history of suicide in the family. They're really not mobilized at all. And I think there we want to move in a little more quickly.
Well, you're speaking as a psychiatrist, but don't statistics show, and I'm quoting from a Scientific American article from February 27th of this year, 43% of those who have been prescribed antidepressants had no psychiatric diagnosis or any mental health care beyond the prescription of the drug, and chances are they got that drug from their family physician who will show very little follow-up following that.
No, that is shameful, and that approach has been shown not to work. I think I would say this is like if we had a culture in which we would say to patients, you have cancer, and for this cancer, the best treatment is radiation and chemotherapy, but we can't afford the radiation. So, you know, you're only going to get the chemotherapy. The insurance company buildings would be torn down brick by brick. And I think that does hold for psychotherapy.
But this is the reality of the situation, is it not?
It is.
Yeah,
it is.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Peter.
Yeah, I mean, it is often the reality of the situation. Not to say that family doctors, GPs, internists can't do a good job with mood disorders. There are plenty of studies showing with the right support and so on they can. But you can't just give a medicine, cross your fingers, and say, come back in 6 months.
Go ahead, Dr. Gordon. You wanted to say something.
Yeah, what I want to say is I'm really advocating very strongly for a shift in the approach. And this is I wrote Unstuck because of the thousands of people who have said to me, can you put in book form this program that you do? And I do it because my strongest belief is that our capacity to understand and help ourselves is far greater than we know, far greater than most of us as physicians either have experienced or believe, and that the whole way of working with depression has to shift from a reliance on the physician to the physician being a guide who helps people develop their own capacity to help themselves, to balance and change their own biology, their own psychology.
Can you give us a thumbnail version of your 7-stage journey?
The seven stages, the first is the call, the recognition that you are depressed. I think it's very important. It's important to recognize for many of the reasons Dr. Kramer says, and just because it's blighting people's lives. Depression is not, but some people just don't know they have it. So waking up to the fact that you're depressed, beginning to see that there are things already in your life that you're doing to make yourself feel better. One of the examples I give right at the beginning of my book, is a woman who felt better when she did yoga, when she called her friend Barbara, and when she went to church. So what she's realizing is she's not as helpless and hopeless as she and most depressed people think. There are things she can do. The second part is looking for guides. I do feel that most people, when they're depressed, do need guides to help them make their way through and out of and beyond depression. Some of those guides may be people. They may be physicians, particularly physicians who are accustomed to working with nutrition and to giving people the nourishment and the supplementation and exploring some of the physical, potential physical causes of depression. And they also need guides whom, in our society, are psychotherapists, who, people who they feel welcomed by, not people, as you mentioned at the top of the show, who sort of listen for a few minutes and write out a prescription. I think that's counter-therapeutic. In any case, people need someone, could be a primary care physician, more often could be a psychiatrist, could be a psychotherapist, who is there for them and who has confidence and trust in them and hope for them and who understands this difficult territory of depression. The third stage is I call surrendering to change, moving back into the current of your life. When you're depressed, you're sidelined. There are symptoms of immobility and stasis and stuckness. And I think physical exercise can be very, very important, even if it's just a little, even for those people who feel just almost immobilized. Getting them to move a little. Incidentally, physical exercise has been shown in animals to regenerate cells in the hippocampus, an area of the brain that's probably involved in depression. The fourth stage is dealing with the demons, dealing, we might call them aspects of our character, issues in our lives, loneliness, lethargy, perfectionism, procrastination, guilt, all the things that characterize many of us, some of us who aren't depressed as well as some of us who are, and learning. And I give some exercises whereby you can have relax with and learn from, have dialogues with and learn from these different aspects that are troubling to you. Mm-hmm. The sixth stage that comes to some of us is understanding and recognizing the dark night of the soul, that despair that may predispose us or push us to suicidal feelings and even to suicidal acts. And I think particularly here in the dark night, it's crucial to reach out to guides. But I think it's important to see suicidal feelings as not necessarily sort of the certification that you've got this terrible disease, but as a certification of a sense of desperation and of no alternatives. And what's crucial here, I think, is to have someone who can help you look at possible alternatives. This is incidentally sometimes where medication
right. If you have suicidal feelings, you should get professional help, wouldn't you?
I agree completely.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And the professional need not panic. There are some studies that have come out in recent years showing 10% of, one in five American adolescents has significant suicidal feelings.
Can I jump in here?
Sure.
Hearing this list, put together in this way makes me very uncomfortable. It has a moral and spiritual feel to it that I think in a way takes away from the notion of depression as a disease. My last book, my most recent one, was a Freud biography, and I think it even moves away from that sort of neutrality in psychoanalysis that Freud didn't practice, but that was the ideal of psychoanalysis, that the notion of a guide or a coach, I mean, I have to say, I don't think of myself as a great advocate for medication, but if I had something that was really a danger to my health and well-being altogether, and if it were the case, say, that medication worked without enormous side effects, I might very well prefer that intervention as a first recourse than having to put myself in the hands of someone who has all these beliefs about how the world works and what my direction should be.
But that, and of course, that's your choice. I'm offering a way, many of the people, there are millions of people in this country who have taken antidepressants and have not found much benefit from them and do not like taking them. If people have the choice, what I'm presenting is a way that I've worked with people now for 40 years, a way that we've trained thousands of people to work. I don't see it as moralistic at all. Spiritual, yes, that's the next stage. Our work is spiritual work. And as you know, the word psyche has to do, is really the word for soul. It's not just the word Bruno Bettelheim pointed out, that we are in a profession of helping to heal souls. And we, as well as being scientists, and, in some, it's only, it's moral in the sense of my respect, utter respect for people's capacity to help themselves and my willingness to be there with them as they go through this experience. That doesn't say that people shouldn't take medication.
Dr. Kramer?
I think where I pulled back was probably the word guide. I think it's true that we have spiritual sides and that psychotherapy taps into those and, you know, allows us to make change through that part of ourselves. But I think that it is ideally, a bit more of a hands-off process than what I'm imagining in this
I have to give an idea. We're running out of time. We're talking with Dr. James Gordon and with Dr. Peter Kramer on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Dr. Gordon is author of Unstuck, Your Guide to the Seven-Stage Journey Out of Depression. And, of course, Peter Kramer is author of Listening to Prozac and Against Depression. Let's see if we can get a phone call or two in here. John in Wichita. Hi, John.
Hello, Ira.
Hi there.
Thank you for your show. And Dr. Gordon and Dr. Kramer, thank you for your work in this area, which I think is one of the most damnable diseases on the planet.
Have you got a question for us?
I have a question. To Dr. Kramer, I want to know if the chemical imbalances that are often cited as the cause of depression, if these can be objectively measured in the clinic a priori before prescribing the medicine.
All right.
Yeah. No, the answer is no. I think there is some progress in predicting who'll do well with what. There's some new genetic studies showing that they actually involve what is informally called the chemical imbalance. They involve a transporter in the brain that has to do with serotonin, one of the neurotransmitters that the chemical imbalance idea refers to, and it looks as if people with some genes do better on medication and people with other forms of the same gene do less well on medication. So I think that general theory that the transmitters have something to do with this has been getting, I think the public has the impression it's gotten less and less support over the last few years, gotten more and more. There was a review in the New England Journal of Medicine that cited evidence for some enzymes in the brain that break down these transmitters that people with long-term depression seem to have less of. So I think the theory is getting more support, but it's never been at the level of saying we can measure the transmitters in your brain and say whether you should get medication or not and which one. And by the way, I want to agree with Dr. Gordon. These medicines are not terrific. You know, they're just only so good.
Yeah.
One thing I just want to add here is that one of the things that we do know is that stress is significantly implicated in depression, and many of the techniques that I'm talking about that anybody can learn from Unstuck or from a therapist who is working with them are these techniques to reduce stress. And if you reduce stress, you are likely to have a much better outcome. So I think this is the primary care for depression, reducing stress, looking at things in a more thoughtful, less fearful, less reactive way, feeling a connection. And we'll have to talk sometime more about the difference between a guide and a therapist, because I'm not sure that we're really all that different. But having somebody there who gives you what Carl Rogers, who I know you're, you know,
well, let me we have to take a break. Well, let me just ask you, do you think that you can, that your therapies using yoga and different kinds of holistic medicine can work as good as the drugs or they're purported to work?
Yes.
You do?
And
that's the crux of the argument we're having here.
And what I say, what if you look at the scientific literature, and I have hundreds and hundreds of references in Unstuck, is that many of these approaches have been shown to work as much better than placebo as antidepressant drugs. And sometimes when they've been compared to antidepressant drugs, they've done just as well and sometimes better. Mm-hmm. And individually.
Dr. Kramer?
I'm sorry?
Any commenting about a minute before the
break?
I just
looked at the psychotherapy literature, and the effects of psychotherapy have gone down steadily over the past 10 or 15 years. And the reason is the same reason for the change in our view of medication that I've given, which is that the standards for what constitutes a good study and what constitutes a good outcome have gone up. And I think if you compare some, I mean, I don't know why one particular one has these seven elements rather than some other six or seven elements, but if you compare studies of efficacy from 20 or 30 years ago, they just were much more liberal. The reason psychotherapy looks less good in recent studies is that when you raise the standards, you know, this turns out to be a very hard condition to change.
Okay, let me interrupt. Can you gentlemen stay for a few more moments?
Glad to.
Good. We're going to take a short break and come back and talk more with Dr. James Gordon, author of Unstuck, Your Guide to the Seven-Stage Journey of Depression. Dr. Peter Kramer, author of Against Depression. He'll stay with us also. So please, you're invited back too. We'll be right back after this short break. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking this hour about depression with Dr. James Gordon, author of Unstuck, Your Guide to the Seven-Stage Journey of Depression. Dr. Peter Kramer, author of Listening to Prozac and Against Depression, on number 1-800-989-8255. Let's get a quick phone call or two if we can. Trevor in Portland, Oregon. Hi, Trevor. Trevor, are you there? Oh. Okay, let's go now to Mary in Maryland. Hi, Mary.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I'm a psychiatrist in private practice. I do both therapy and medication, and I just have an observation that seems to be somewhat at odds with what Dr. Gordon is saying, and I just wanted to get some your guest's comments on that. That is that in my practice, I would say the majority of people who come to see me really have tried very hard to manage their depression on their own. And, you know, in my area, it's a pretty medically sophisticated community, and so they've tried acupuncture and yoga and exercise and even bright lights to some extent, and I certainly encourage them to do that and talk to them about nutrition too, but I often medication is called for, and I guess I feel like Dr. Gordon's perspective seems to be somewhat in line with the idea in the popular culture that people are just looking for a quote-unquote happy pill and, you know, going into the psychiatrist at the drop of a hat and getting on medication for normal everyday stresses. And that's just really not been the case with my practice. And I realize Dr. Gordon's not saying that, but I guess I'm concerned that people could be detrimental to people's understanding of depression, that it really is something I should just pull myself by my bootstraps.
Right, Dr. Mary, let me get a comment from Dr. Gordon. Yes.
You know, first of all, I hope you'll read Unstuck and then call me and tell me what you think, because I don't say something like that at all. I say that this is indeed a very serious time. It's a time when things are really out of balance and not going right. It's a time for significant change, including in most cases finding a professional with whom you can work. I think the difference is that what I'm saying is that if you can put together a program which includes a number of approaches which have a fair amount of scientific evidence supporting them, which have no negative side effects, and that if you can help people to see what they can do for themselves in an organized, coherent way, not a little bit of this here and a little bit of that there, some of which may make sense and some of which may not, is that the people I see, virtually every one of whom, and I live in Washington, D.C., virtually every one of whom either had been on antidepressants or had been told to take antidepressants, I think everybody I write about in the book had a diagnosis of clinical depression, that if you can put this program together for people, if you can help them put it together for themselves, they can get better, that there is hope, there is possibility. I'm not saying that some of them may not need medication. I think that remains to be seen. I'm just saying it should be a last resort and not a first choice.
Thanks for calling, Mary.
Can I say
yes, please, Dr. Kramer,
you know, it is obviously the problem with the clinical perspective. We see each other's failures. Dr. Gordon doesn't see people who've done very well on medicine and never come to him, and Mary doesn't see people who've done terrifically with yoga and meditation and don't come to her. I was thinking something I should have said earlier is that I have really struggled with the data, the statistics. You know, what do we really know on this? And put a lot of little essays about this, sort of tutorials on a website, which is associated with Psychology Today. My part of it is called In Practice, and have tried to make sense about why things look better and worse. That is, why is it that psychotherapy isn't doing as well in studies lately than it has done in the past? And I'm a great fan and a practitioner and teacher of psychotherapy.
All right. We've run out of time, gentlemen. I'd like to thank you both for taking time to be with us. And it's been an enlightening discussion about depression. And I think we've all learned something from it. Dr. James Gordon, clinical professor in psychiatry, family medicine at Georgetown University School of Medicine, and author of Unstuck, Your Guide to the Seven-Stage Journey of Depression. And Dr. Peter Kramer is clinical professor of psychiatry at Brown University, author of Against Depression. He also does write that blog for Psychology Today, and you can find a link to it at sciencefriday.com. Thank you both for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you, Ira. Thank you, Peter, too.
Thank you, Jim.